Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Don Schenk, launching a radio ministry in a new language in Pakistan and Afghanistan.
There are others where they have said that at the end of the program, when the pastor prayed, they placed their hand on the radio and prayed with the pastor. And they're, you know, now I want to follow Jesus. Please help me.
Don Schenk, next. Don Schenk directs the Tide Radio Ministry, which broadcasts Christian programming into relatively unevangelized regions of the world in multiple languages. As you'll hear, the ministry will be expanding its outreach to include Pakistan and Afghanistan. Here's Spencer Dahlke.
Well, I've not heard of the Tide Ministry before. It's an interesting name for an international ministry. Would you tell us what it is and why it's named so?
Certainly. It's a ministry that started in 1946, and I wasn't around at that time. I'm sure you weren't around at that time, but it was an exciting time. You know, things were just wrapping up with at the end of World War II. Radio stations were gaining popularity, and Chambersburg, Pennsylvania was getting their first radio station. And so there was a minister in Chambersburg, and he was a fairly well known. He was invited for different campaigns and stuff. And one couple in his congregation said, "You should do a program and we will pay for the first year of airtime if you do it." So he started that. And on the first day that station went on air was a Sunday morning, August 11th, 1946. He was one of the first programs that morning preaching live on the air. From that, it's grown into an international broadcast that is, we no longer do that English program, but we're now working in 14 different countries in over 34, I think we're up to 35 languages now, working on number 36 soon. And you asked about, you know, the name of it. When Charlie Byers was at the pastor who started it, there was a song that he knew of. It was one of his favorite songs called "When the Gospel Tide Comes Rolling In." From that, he kind of made that his theme song for his program, and he called it the Gospel Tide Hour. Around 2008, when we dropped English programming and put all of our focus into overseas ministry, we just shortened it to the Tide. Some people said, "Well, why'd you take the gospel out of it?" No, we don't. Well, we're still Gospel Tide, but it's simply just a shorter street name, if you will. So that's a little bit of an overview and a picture of who we are and how we got to be where we are. It's unique the way God did open doors just through relationships. For example, somebody who was working with Transworld Radio that was a friend of Charlie's. And so when Transworld Radio opened up, that's how we got into Africa and India back in the late 70s, early 80s. That was the first prompt to begin international broadcasting. And then the way that God has just taken it from there and has just led us as an organization and our board of directors to make that decision to discern that God was saying, there's enough good Christian broadcasting here in the U.S. There are people around the world who don't have the gospel available to them in their own language. And we just sense God was saying, that's where we want you to focus. And so that's what we've done. And God has continually opened up doors into places I never imagined we'd be. And I'm sure Charlie, when he started in 1946, never imagined that this would go into some of the far reaches of the world.
So what brought you to the ministry?
I was born in Africa. My parents were missionaries. So I spent most of my life growing up there. When I came back here to the U.S. to go to college, after graduating, got married, always had a desire to go back. That's a big, long story in itself. But eventually, my wife and I did serve 12 years in Zimbabwe, Africa. And when we came back, when we sensed God was saying, "I'm done with you here," we came back. I wasn't sure what I was going to do. But I found out about this organization. Another friend of mine said, "Hey, well, you know, there's this organization, their director's retiring. Maybe it's something to be a good fit for you." And I looked into it and submitted my resume, went through the interview process, and here I am 24 years later, director of a mission organization where God still fulfills my desire. And I think it's a calling that I still have to be a missionary in a sense. I'm not a missionary living in another country, but by proxy, I'm enabling local people on the ground in those countries to share the gospel with their own people in their own language.
You mentioned that you are a radio ministry. Is there a particular reason why you guys went with radio? Is there value there to the ministry?
There still is. I think, you know, radio is still a valuable communication tool, even here in North America. And I should clarify, we are known primarily as a radio ministry, and a lot of what we do is still on radio. In many of these countries, especially out in the more remote villages, places where we're focusing to get the gospel, the internet is getting there. So we are transitioning. We now refer to ourselves sort of as a global media ministry because we do some TV, we do some online video and audio. But I think there is a higher percentage of the population in some of these countries that they still rely on radio. That is their source of information. So where we are at this point as an organization, as a mission organization, is we look at any demographic where we feel God is calling us to move. And however they are consuming media, we want to have the gospel available to them in that media. Take, for example, Southern Africa, our Ndebele language program there and the partner we work with there, they still broadcast on traditional FM. And that's basically for older people out in the villages. There's been a huge urbanization of younger populations. And the younger people in the city, they don't listen to the FM as much. But everybody uses WhatsApp, cheap Chinese cell phones that have just flooded the market. Everybody has a cell phone. Everybody has access to the internet. So we've got thousands of people. We've had to, they have seven different WhatsApp groups because the groups grow so big. So it's distributed and people share it then from WhatsApp. So the gospel is going out in different formats. But yeah, radio is still the heart of it in many countries. And so there's still that production of the audio message of the gospel in the indigenous voice.
How far is your guys' reach?
We currently have partners, active partnerships in 14 different countries, plus the Middle East, and we're doing programming in 35 different languages. It's a huge reach. The potential, take for example, India. There's over a billion people in India. We do two Hindi language programs there, which is a very widespread language. But we also do some tribal languages for smaller groups. So exactly how many, because that one goes out through shortwave, we've had responses from Indian people working in the Middle East who have heard the program off of the shortwave because it reaches out beyond India into the Middle East. So it's really hard to say how far can we reach. And of course, some of the programs that are on the internet, it doesn't matter where people are in the world, they can access those.
Well, I saw the press release or the news article, whatever you want to call it, saying, I guess you guys have started a new broadcast for the Pashtun people in Pakistan and Afghanistan, I think is what you guys said. I guess just to preface that, who are the Pashtuns?
Okay. They are a people group which crosses the border. So they are in Pakistan, they're in Afghanistan, and there's northern and southern Pashto, so it's a little more complicated than just a people group. But as a people group in general, they are very distinct in who they are, very loyal to their traditional culture and religion. Just like here in North America, there's a lot of people that say, well, I'm American, I'm Christian, the two are the same, which we know they're not. But in other countries, it's the same way. You know, they have trouble distinguishing between their religion and culture. One of the things that we have found is gaining some good response from them is the fact that taking the gospel to them in audio format, they are still very much an oral society. They have a rich heritage and a rich history in passing down traditions orally. So storytelling, that's part of their culture. So to be able to tell the stories of the Bible in their language, it resonates a bit more with them. Now, I will tell you, they are deeply entrenched in Islam. I'd love to tell you that all of our responses were getting a great response. We're getting a lot of responses. A significant number of the responses are pushback. We've had people call in and say, listen, you don't know what you're talking about. The Quran is the only authority. You need to stop preaching this Bible stuff. and teach from the Quran. We try to avoid getting into debates. We try to avoid putting down or trying to disprove other religions. We find that it's best, let's present gospel truth and just consistently, you know, as Jesus said, knock, keep knocking. We just keep the gospel truth out there. And there are, you know, our partners on the ground are well-trained on how to respond to some of these, especially with a Muslim society where they know they've heard about Jesus. Jesus is mentioned in the Quran. Jesus is, but to them, he's just a prophet. And so we're presenting him as the Son of God who lived on this earth, who performed miracles, who is the light of the world. And so that's a message that it's a little bit contentious for people who say he's just a prophet. But as they get into it, as we encourage them and even point out that the Quran says that Muslims should respect the scriptures and should respect the Bible. You know, if you've ever read the Quran, I've read it, but I've read it in English. And I know that true believers will say you have to read it in the individual language, otherwise you haven't read it. But in the Quran, it does say you're to respect people of the book. So really, Muslims should respect followers of Christ. Our hope is that they will also respect the scriptures and that God, the Holy Spirit, will speak into their hearts as they hear truth proclaimed.
You mentioned the Pashtuns are traditional people. Considering Christianity kind of came out of the Middle East, is the real pushback, I guess, because they don't believe Jesus to be God? Or like, do you?
Well, it's because it's a complicated situation. Mm-hmm. As you said, you know, we are basically Pakistan and Afghanistan are nearby to the birthplace of Christianity. And it's interesting, some of the countries, there are other countries where we have Arabic language programming, and we're trying to get into various dialects, because with Arabic, there's a lot of different dialects. And to get to have the gospel available in the language, in the dialect that people are most comfortable with, you know, if we look at a place like Yemen, which is extremely closed, we're really still, that's still on our radar. We're trying to get some believers there. Before Islam was established, Christianity was present there, but Islam has come in, and it's unfortunate that in that region of the world, Islam has grown faster and has basically overshadowed Christianity. Unfortunately, also through that, there has been violent conflicts. I think both Christianity and Islam would both, you know, true believers would say they're religions of peace. But if you look at the history of the Crusades and some of the things, there hasn't been peace. So it's deeper than just a religious belief. There's a history there. So that's why we really want to present the truth of who Christ is. Not just don't look at the history of Christianity, but look at the truth of who God is and what God really desires for people.
Well, I have to ask, considering that these people are also in like Pakistan and Afghanistan, which I think you've described as not too friendly to Christianity, right. Do you guys see any sort of like red tape that you have to like kind of cut through to broadcast into these areas?
It's a little bit different because the two countries are neighboring countries, so it's a little bit different in each one. In Afghanistan, what we have going in there has to go in on shortwave, and it's very difficult. That is a hard place to have boots on the ground to really connect with listeners. Pakistan, it's a little bit better, although Pakistan is officially an Islamic republic. Legally, Christians are allowed to exist, but practically on the ground, Christians are persecuted. There's an openness, but also a threat. And so it can be very dangerous sometimes for people to go out into the field. But at the same time, it is amazing and it's inspiring to see how people, when they are enlightened by the truth, their desire to share that with their own people and how they will stand strong and they will stand up against persecution and risk their lives. It's somewhat convicting. Would I be that strong? Because we live in a nation that, yes, there's a lot of un-Christian values expressed in our society. There's a lot of freedom in that way. And there's pushback in certain areas against the expression of our faith. but nothing really to the point of somebody putting a gun to your head and saying, you recant of your Christian faith, or this is the last day you'll see. I have met people who have been beaten. I've met the widow of a man who was martyred simply for preaching the gospel. But God does work in amazing ways also to protect some of these people.
What sort of programs do you guys produce? Like, do you read the Bible? I know you mentioned you produce it in the Pashtun dialect. What does the programming look like for broadcast?
Essentially, in each country, it might be slightly different, but there's a very similar format. Obviously, a core component of the program is a teaching on a portion of scripture. There'd be an introduction and close. Oftentimes, there will be some music that's included. Almost all of our programs, they will have Christian music that's produced by our partners. Some countries, they do have Christian music that they can access to incorporate into the program. And a lot of it, they have to produce their own. But what's unique about that is it is taking Christian lyrics and producing program in the indigenous style music, so it resonates with people. And that's the important part. And then there's usually an invitation to respond. And that's why it's important that we, when we establish a partnership, that we make sure our partners are equipped, trained, and capable of providing that follow-up care. Because the goal is not just to get the word out there. The goal is then to be able to connect with the listeners or the viewers to make disciples, to plant churches, and to establish leadership for those.
What's the part that your partners play in all of this? Like, are they radio station managers, or what does that partnership look like?
Yeah. Basically, what the partnership looked like is we are connecting with them and assisting them. In some countries, we have built studios for them. In some countries, there's no one standard thing that I can say, this is what a partnership looks like in each country. The core is we are equipping them and enabling them to produce Christian media outreach and to utilize that for discipleship making and church planting. That's the core of it. Say, for example, in Albania, there's a Christian radio station there that we work. It's sort of a three-way partnership between the radio station there. We have pastors on the ground. We're helping them to produce the program. The radio station is airing it, and then they're following up with listeners, forming fellowship groups and planting churches. What is, as I said, the standard and the key component of every partnership is that we're not providing the messages that Charlie Byers preached years ago for translation. We're not taking a radio program from here in the U.S. and translating it. We are enabling them and equipping them to share what God's done in their hearts with their own people in their own language. So it's a culturally relevant presentation. And people do resonate with that more. You're talking about Pakistan. One of the things is the other language we've been doing there is Punjab. And then the Punjabi language is spoken by over a third of the people in Pakistan. It's the largest people group. But the national language of Pakistan is Urdu. Education, business, all this happens in Urdu. But then somebody, a Punjabi people, they hear this radio program in their own language. Immediately, it creates a good connection point. It kind of opens up, oh, I want to listen to this. They would fully understand the same words and the same program in Urdu, but there's a bit more of a heart connection. And that's why we work with the partners on the ground. Because you and I could learn some of these languages. It might take a while, but somebody hearing me speak a bit of Ndebele. When I'm speaking Ndebele, people know that's not an indigenous Ndebele person speaking. You know, there's an accent. It's there. But again, it comes back to really engaging people and understanding that this is not an outside message coming in, something that's trying to bring in a different culture from outside, but it's coming from somebody they can identify. Oh, this is somebody, one of my own people telling me something. It raises the level of interest and engagement.
How do you find these people for partnership?
That is an interesting story. How does it find? So we don't have a clear pattern. When we started in 2008, when we said we're going to stop English and we're going to go purely indigenous broadcasting, at that point, we were in 9 different languages. And my board of directors said to me, go out and identify they use the term low-hanging fruit. Where are places that, you know, there's a need for the gospel, where we could potentially recruit some people and do that? I came back with a list, and it's interesting. I still have that notebook with my handwritten notes and all that. Of all of the countries and areas I identified, one of those we're working in. But from that point, from 9 languages to over 30, some 35 today, that growth has just been God making unique connections. I mentioned Albania. The radio station and owner in Albania was at a conference in the U.S. Somebody else at that conference started to talk about the Tide Ministry because, hey, you're in radio, the Tide's doing radio broadcasting, shared what we were doing with church planting in India. And that person stayed in touch with us and said, we need that kind of a structure and church planting in Albania and Kosovo. We looked into it, we visited, and we developed a partnership. Sometimes I get lots and lots of email inquiries. Some of them I just have to say, sorry, that's not in our wheelhouse. That's not what we can do. Others say, okay, tell me more about what are the opportunities there. But it's simply sometimes it's a nearby country. If we had work in India, have some connections then with some pastors reaching into Bhutan and also into Nepal. So now our studio in India, actually we have radio pastors from Bhutan, from Nepal in 2 different languages. They ride overnight on a train all the way down to our studio in India. They'll record several messages, help them put them together there, package them. And then the contact at the end of the program would be that individual in Nepal. So I know that's not giving you a simple answer. It kind of like sounds mixed up in some way, but here it is. You know, when we're sensitive to where God is leading, and it does take a lot of prayer and discernment. We get a lot more requests and proposals than we actually follow through with in the partnerships. But by the time we engage in a partnership, it's been well vetted. We know these are genuine believers in a country who we can work with and we can enable them. They have a heart to reach their own people. We're walking alongside them, helping them to realize that.
I understand that one of the provinces where the Pashtun language, you reach them with the radio broadcasts, has also been, I think you've described, as been affected by some war going on there. Would you care to tell us a little bit about maybe how that affects your ministry there?
I know that there for a while, there's an area of Pakistan that India and Pakistan argue over who actually owns it. And there has been, it kind of sometimes it escalates, other times it's just like they're simmering. What that does do is it prevent or it makes it more dangerous for the people who live there because they're just part of this political conflict. It's not a religious conflict, although India is Hindi and Pakistan is primarily Islamic. So that muddies it and complicates it. It basically makes it puts people in a situation where they're looking for peace and hope. So it opens the door in some ways, but at the same time kind of closes the door a little bit because it's very dangerous for our discipleship workers and our boots on the ground to try to get into those areas and to follow up and work with that.
Would you happen to have any stories of like people who have been brought to Christ or interesting encounters your partners have had in these countries as they have been bringing the gospel via radio to Pakistan and Afghanistan?
Yeah, let me just share. I'll read. I do have one of the things we ask our partner ministries to give quarterly reports. And in that report, we ask them to give us some samples of responses, translate so that we can understand them. And here's one where a listener says, you know, I listened to your program and it was hosted by the pastor who gave very clear teaching and shared how God has complete authority over evil spirits. It was also explained how gentle and kind Jesus Christ was. yet at certain moments he also showed firmness. This proved that even Jesus could not tolerate unfaithfulness towards God, no matter how close someone was to him. At the end of the program, when the brother asked to pray, the way he did clearly reflected strong faith in God. This is exactly how it should be. Whenever we pray, we should ask with the same strong and unwavering faith. As always, today's program was a treasure trove of knowledge. So somebody who's being affirmed, who is being strengthened, and you can see that somebody coming out of an Islamic faith saying, okay, so God does demand obedience, and Jesus actually aligns with that. There are others where they have said that at the end of the program, when the pastor prayed, they placed their hand on the radio and prayed with the pastor. And they're there, you know, I want to follow Jesus. Please help me. And that's where the important part comes in, to be able to provide Bibles in their language, the literature distribution. That's another aspect where we haven't really talked about all those things that go along with the media outreach that are not as highly visible, but what is happening on the ground in the country, giving the resources to people, helping them embrace Christ as they hear and as their lives are impacted.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, Don Schenck, head of the Tide Radio Ministry. If you'd like more information, go to thetide.org. Thanks for listening, and I hope you can join us again on Monday at this same time for another edition of His People.